for this monthly event called Parivartan, the Festival of Transformation. And today's topic is God versus Google. And this is for those who are coming first time for this session. I would like to introduce our speaker, His Grace Shikshashram Prabhu. Shikshashram Prabhu has done his education in logistic administration. And then for 7 years, he worked for Indian Air Force. And he also represented Indian Air Force in national tennis tournaments. He was also selected in the Indian Air Force as a fighter pilot. And at the same time, at the peak of his career, the search or the quest for spirituality arose in his heart. And from that day on, he decided to dedicate his life for the service of God and humanity. And in 1994, he joined ISKCON as a full-time brahmachari, and since then serving in ISKCON. He conducted his seminars for many educational institutes and corporate sector also in and around Nasik. He is also well-known and famous in Europe for his this kind of seminars. He is very expert in guiding the citizens of people from France, from UK, from Italy, and many other nations over there. And from last 5 years, he is holding a post of Nasik ISKCON president and looking after the whole soul preaching and the services of this temple. So I thank you all for coming for this session. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And this is an announcement for those who are having their mobiles in their pocket. Please keep your mobile on silent mode or either switch them off. And those who are having small kids or children, you can send your children or kids in the parking or in the park or in the garden so they can play there and the sessions will not get disturbed by them. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. How many of you are coming for the very first time? Heard the cell phone? So, I guess that was a reminder again to all of you to kindly take out your cell phones and put it on silent mode or switch it off. That would be the best. Since the topic is also in connection with the electronic media. God versus Google. I guess whenever you attend a kind of a seminar like this or say just go for a movie, when you see the poster or the title of an event like that, you imagine something in your mind, is it not? Like if somebody is going for a movie and the title of the movie, you know, like Bollywood, they have titles nowadays which are very thought-provoking. Kameene. Now they are falling short of so many titles that, you know, maybe so much frustration during the shooting that somebody just spoke some swear words to someone, that became the title of the movie. Now, I would want to ask you that when you came, now you have come over here, a seminar like this entitled God versus Google. So, I would want to know from you what you all thought in your mind, what would be in store today's talk. What were your expectations or what are your expectations? Yeah.
You said people are going away from the God and coming closer to the Google. Nobody can stop in browsing on the Google. Even if he doesn't browse for a single day, he thinks that something has to be done. So, and everybody has been spent, and even well, say, midnight, he browses, he or she browses Google. So, it has become part of life.
Yeah, even nobody worships God at midnight. First of all of you are aware what Google is? All of you are aware what Google is? Huh? Okay, sir, okay. You know more than what I was expecting. So, people are now so much into Googling. There was a man who was praying to God, and he was revealing his heart. He said, "My dear God, nowadays I don't feel hungry. And I spent sleepless nights. I don't feel thirsty. And I always see stars. Am I in love with someone?" Symptoms of someone in love: no hunger, no sleep, no thirst. God said, "Sorry, you are just a software engineer in an IT company." So, well, of course, our life has become so much dependent on so many things which has been just merely presented in front of us. When it comes to, say, the electronic media or the electronic lifestyle, nobody asked us at a gunpoint, "Use this, or else you will be shot dead." No one. I hope so. Till now, no one has done that. It was just presented. And then we started to indulge. That's the word I would want to use. Indulge in it. And now, what have we found? That, in fact, it has swallowed us to much extent. What all of these support systems which we call now, the cell phone, the internet, the television, so many things. So, herein it's not simply that we are going to discuss that how Google is putting up a challenge to God. And it's been official, I'm not just fabricating something. I'll be giving you facts and figures of how, what you call it, the search engine. It's not simply a dead engine. It is very systematically, you know, spreading in a way, and also spreading in a way not just all over in the human society, to just give them some convenience, but practically engulfing their lives in such a way that people have put more faith in Google than God. Now, in India, we may not be so much aware of it, or we may not see the effects of it. But yes, imperceptibly, it's happening. And what is the aftermath of that? Our human relationships are getting affected. It is at the cost of our human relationship, wherein God in someone's life, God in our life, is supposed to help us in our relationship with God and in our relationship with fellow human beings. So, what we are trying to find out today, if Google is God, what they are proclaiming now officially, then let us see whether they are establishing what God would establish, or God is very adept in establishing, whether it's being getting established. So, I have begun by calling it Shri Shri Google Dev Bhagwan, and this is just the Indian version of calling Google something like that. Over here you can't see what the aarti, it's, the aarti is also written. Om Jai Google Hare, Swami Jai Google Hare, programs a sankat, something like that, you know, click se dur kare. Om Jai Google Hare, Jo Dhyave, Sho Pave, दुख बिन से मन का स्वामी, दुख बिन से मन का गूगल हरे एक क्लिक से दूर करे, ऑल दैट स्टफ यू नो. सो यू नो इट्स वेरी वेरी स्पिरिचुअली काइंड ऑफ यू नो सेटअप. इट्स नॉट सिंपली दैट इट्स जस्ट अ मशीन और इट्स जस्ट अ सर्च इंजिन. इट्स वेरी सिस्टमैटिकली स्पिरिचुअली with a tinge of spirituality in it. So over here our gentleman is performing an aarti. Now herein, if you go to this particular website www.churchofgoogle.org, how many of you have visited this website anytime in your search, in your googling? How many of you are aware of such a thing? No one? No one? Okay. So this is an official site of the Google which talks about how there is a church of Google, just like there is church of God. What is church? Church is a temple. Like you are sitting in a temple. So over there it's mentioned in this particular site that there is this official church of Google wherein Google Dev Bhagwan is worshipped as God, and they proclaim that they are better than God, and the religion which they are prophesizing is a religion called Googleism. Like you have Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, Googleism. Yes, we may smile at this, but they are very much serious about, you know, their religion. And they call themselves as omnipresent. Google is watching you all the time. Google is everywhere, all cognizant. And we'll look into how very systematically, scientifically, logically, they are proving that Google is better than any god on this planet or in this world. Now, and in this particular site, they have come up with 9 proofs. 9 proofs for Google being God. So before I present, let's try to brainstorm and find out from all of you that if I were on a debate with you, you were on the side of Google, and you would present Google's case, Google being God. So what would be the proof which you would present for the topic, which means yes, Google is God, in order to prove that particular position of Google? What proof would you present? How would you say Google is God? Essentially, it's that. Okay, we'll go one by one. Let's go one by one. Yeah.
Whatever we require.
Okay, it provides all types of information, whatever we require or whatever we don't require. Am I right? Yeah. So it provides all kinds of information. Therefore, Google is God. You had something?
World of fantasy.
How does it prove its world of?
Information. Say, an extension of that, fantasy, or the world of fallacy, the information which you can't reach around you.
No, okay, but you mean to say God is something like that? No. You have to prove how Google is God. Like he said that Google provides you all kinds of information just like God would do. You know, God has all kinds of, he has everything, he knows everything. God is all knowing, all knowledgeable.
I think I would again repeat the same point as omnipresent.
Omnipresent, okay.
Okay,
God. Google is omnipresent. Omnipresent means present everywhere. Someone over here had said something. Okay. You have something. Yeah. Ah, you get the answer. This is a valid point. Huh? You just Google answers all your prayers. Sometimes better than God. Sometimes quicker than God, in a more efficient manner, with many different ranges, varieties, you know, to select from. Anyone else? Yeah, you had something. Food. Oh, wow, I never knew this. Google can provide you free food. If you are hungry, then you can, what do you search for? What do you type? Free food. Is that what? Free food, and then you know, so many hits, you know, you get free food available here and here. Okay, wow. So, anyone hungry? So, there is a nice suggestion out here. Anything else? There are what?
Two gods. One is the total god, one is inner god, one is outer god. Inner god we pray, but outer god we look on Google.
Okay. So, if you want to see God. Okay, so you mean to say that even if you want to look for God, you can look for God, you can search for God in Google. Huh? No search. So, you mean to say, you are saying that Google in that sense is God? Okay. Okay. Let's begin. It says, now these are the proofs which are from that particular site, churchofgoogle.org. 9 proofs. So, the first is, they say Google is omniscient with 9.5 billion web pages. That's huge. 9.5 billion web pages. So much information, so much data, so many facts and figures. And you know, it's enormous, it's huge, it's mammoth. So, yes, they have proved that we are omniscient, that we can present so much of information, whatever under the sky, whatever you want to know or whatever you don't want to know, everything and anything. So, this is the first proof. The second, Google is omnipresent. Wherever you go, whether you are in Somalia, whether you are in America, I don't know about Antarctica, but they might have something figured out that Google, you can access Google. Being omnipresent means you can access Google from anywhere and in any language. You know, they have those things translated. You can access in any language also. So, in that sense, Google is omnipresent. And as someone had said that Google answers all prayers many times better than God, that you go to a temple, many times you keep ringing the bells and you ask God so many things for such a long time and you don't see any reciprocation taking place. But when it comes to Google, it's so quick. You know, you just type something, enter, and then comes all whatever you have asked for. It's not just, you know, one variety, but so many varieties presented. So in that sense, they say that Google answers all prayers. Google is potentially immortal. How come? They have such backups for whatever information, facts and figures they have. There is no question of their servers crashing down. Their backups are so well guarded and well protected. And therefore, they say it is potentially immortal, just like God is immortal. So herein you try to understand that how they are equating Google to God, whatever qualities God is having or possessing, over here they are duplicating it. Google is infinite, which means the information is increasing. Right now, as we are looking into that, it has 9.5 billion web pages. Right now, the information has increased. It keeps on increasing, increasing and increasing, the web pages and the information, the facts, the figures. So in that sense, Google is infinite, just like God. Google remembers all. They have a system wherein what people have visited certain sites and, you know, what they have searched for, they have information of all that. Just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaham samatitani vartamanani cha Arjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani, that I know the bhuta, the vartaman and the bhavishya. So in that sense, they are claiming that Google remembers everything of that. Now this is an interesting quality which they are claiming that Google has. Who knows what this means? It is omnibenevolent. That Google is impartial. If a poor person, if he types something, is asking something from Google, Google will not discriminate that you are poor or this is rich. Google is impartial. Just like God is impartial. Anyone can go to a temple of God and ask God that if it is poor or rich or in between, whatever. So, omnibenevolent. And whatever one asks, Google gives that. If you are asking something, something related to money, Google will give you that information. If you are asking something about sports, if you are asking something about fashion, if you are asking something about spirituality, if you are asking something about atheism, this is such a God that will give you all information about atheism also. Now that sounds interesting. Which God would give an information saying that that defies his existence? Are you able to understand? So Google is omnibenevolent. Now this is something interesting which they have come up with. Google is searched more than the words God, Jesus, Allah, Buddha and Krishna all combined. So herein, it is, you know, in a very impartial way, it is presenting that for everyone to now decide that who is being asked for more, who is being searched for more, who is searching God more and who is searching Google more. That's what they are presenting. And the last one, there is more evidence to Google's existence than of God. Like a common layman, a commoner, if he's asked, can you prove the existence of God? That God whom you worship, can you prove that God's existence? We may find people, you know, they fumble. They may not know clearly how to prove the existence of God. But Google has proved its existence with so many evidences that, you know, you have an internet access so many places. It's very evident everywhere that it is present, it's omniscient, it is all of those which we just discussed. So now, are you all convinced? Google is God. Who can challenge Google Dev Bhagwan, who can not be part of this religion called Googleism, Google Dev Maharaj and all that stuff. So now, I'm not supposed to over here just install Google Dev Bhagwan as God, definitely not. So I have come up with some refutations of whatever we just looked into. And before I would present some refutations, I would like to ask the August Assembly out here that how would you refute Google Dev Bhagwan's position as being Bhagwan, as being God? Now, if let's see that, how much are you? Yeah. God can do miracles. Google can't do miracles.
For example, bringing someone to life.
Bringing someone to life. Have you seen God doing that? That's why you are here. You have been resurrected. Well, of course, we can take this point that Google cannot do miracles. Are you all agreeing with this? Google cannot do any miracles? Huh? Well, miracles doesn't have to be that, you know, something comes from somewhere, you know, in front of you. Miracles could be of any kind, like, you know, you just type a word and immediately within a second, you get information about that particular subject in such a vast amount. Isn't that kind of a miracle? Sometimes, some kind of a miracle it is. So, yes, we can accept this point to some extent, but Google can still challenge this particular thing. So, we have to come up with some refutations which go unchallenged. Anything else? Okay, one by one. Wait a minute. Is this a very solid refutation? What is one of the definitions of God? One who has not been created. And what about Google Dev Bhagwan? Google has been created by one who has been created. Who? We. So this is the first refutation which we can come up with, that it is created by someone, it is created by we human beings at a certain point of time. God is eternal, whereas Google is not eternal. There was a date of birth of Google, and definitely there is a date of expiry of Google. Yes, someone from this side had something to say? God can listen to our inner voice. Google can only listen to what you type on the keyboard. Okay, yeah. This is something acceptable. Anyone else? Wait a minute. Google can? Google can give you miseries. Well, how can you say that Google can give you miseries? If Google were to give miseries, then why would every, you know, internet facility has Google in it? Well, then I can say, what about the tsunamis? What about the earthquakes? You know, Google doesn't give that. Who is giving that? God? Well, yes, in one sense, if you try to understand it deeply, what you are saying is also right. Yes, you have something? Someone? Raise the hand. Wow, we have a young one. Oh, that was like hitting the bullseye. God is a living thing. Google is non-living. Let us also go ahead, whatever we have out here. Google is not independent. How would you understand this? Google is not independent. How is it dependent? How is Google dependent? You require the internet connection, you know, so many other things are required for that Google to be accessed. And we won't go in details, but we all know. So in that sense, Google is not independent. Google is, as our little friend said, that it's not a living person, whereas God is a living being. Rather, Google is something which is virtual, ephemeral. You know what this word ephemeral means? It is just, it's just a concept. Like, you know, one of my friends was telling that, all of you know Facebook, definitely, you know Facebook. So this person, his entire life was on Facebook. Everything, whatever, you know, his social contacts, his business contacts, you know, family contacts, his entertainment, his everything, his entire life, he was like using Facebook so much. How many of you use Facebook, first of all, raise your hands. So, I'm aware that, oh, very few, I guess. So, just to make the others aware, Facebook is a social networking site, wherein you can meet new people, your old people or new people, and, you know, introduce, make friends, and it's just unending. So this person, his entire life, everything was dependent. He would spend hours and hours and hours on Facebook. And the Facebook people, the Facebook family, they realized that he's overusing our facility. So one fine day, some person sitting in the Facebook office deleted his account. And he was shattered. He was shattered. His entire life was in shambles. He was almost like someone, you know, who was paralyzed. Can't move, can't do anything. And he was crying, almost on the verge of suicide. Just one guy pressing the delete button and everything in someone's life almost gets deleted. That person's life gets deleted. So, you know, these are some of the effects of how it is so much impersonal or just a virtual thing. It's ephemeral. Then, yeah, Google is impersonal. You see, when you approach God, you approach God and you ask something from God, God is a person who is not going to give you what you want. God is a person who is going to give you what you need. But Google is not like that. If in case you are having lung cancer, you mean someone else who are having lung cancer or, you know, troubled with some deadly disease, and if you are typing in Google about how to smoke well, what are the glories of smoking, it's not going to tell you, hey, come on, no, it's not good for you. It'll give you all information. But God is a person. He deals with us like a person. So God is a person who gives what we need, not just what we want. Then, one can't establish any relationship with Google. Can you say that Google is my husband, Google is my wife, Google is my sister, brother, Google is this? But with God, with Krishna, devotees can establish relationship. In the scriptures it is mentioned that Krishna can become your father, Krishna can become your husband, Krishna can become your lover, Krishna can become your son, your brother. That's what God is. He establishes not just relationship with his own self, but he establishes relationship with so many of his other associates which he sends for our upliftment, for our liberation. So in that sense, that's what God is supposed to do, establish a relationship. This is very important. There is a difference between knowledge and information. What is the difference between knowledge and information? What does Google provide? It provides information, information. But knowledge, we'll be discussing about what true knowledge is. Knowledge is something like our Srimad Bhagavatam, it talks about what is actual knowledge. Vedyam Vastavamatra Shivadam Tapatrayon Unmulanam. Srimad Bhagavatam, the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam speaks about what is factual knowledge, transcendental knowledge, Divya Gyan. You see, the Latin word fact, you know, fact means just an information. It's a fact, they say. The actual meaning, the Latin word of this particular, this fact, it means something which is created. You know, something which is created. But knowledge is not something which is created. Knowledge is something which is actually existing eternally. That is knowledge. So, you may learn about Mother Teresa, that Mother Teresa was born in this particular country at this particular time in this year. And Mother Teresa, she left her body, say in India, this particular year. So this is called information. Now what is knowledge about Mother Teresa? What Mother Teresa did to humanity, is that knowledge or is that information? When that knowledge touches your heart and it melts your heart that you are so much wanting to also follow in the footsteps of a great person like that, when that particular knowledge affects and melts your heart and changes to some extent your lifestyle, that is called knowledge. That is called real knowledge. So, and that has to come from a person. It just can't come from something which is virtual or something which is ephemeral. And whatever information has been given might claim that this information is unlimited, infinite, and it's growing and growing and growing exponentially, whatever. But still it's limited to this planet. Whereas even if you take information from God, He has information about not just this planet, He has information about the entire creation, which comprises of so many millions and billions and zillions of planets and galaxies and Milky Ways and universes. What else? Google is not all good. How would you say that? Google is not all good. Huh? Yes, it can mislead the person. Any examples? How can Google mislead a person? With some misleading information. Anything. You may want information about any damn dirty thing. Google is not going to discriminate and tell you that this is not good for you. So in that sense, it proves that how can Google be omnibenevolent? You remember that word? How can Google be omnibenevolent? Benevolent means somebody who is very charitable. When charity is given, that charity has to be given for the benefit of the other person. Like I give the example, you know, in Bombay, this incident was seen by one of our devotees that a guy, he comes out from a bar, totally drunk, and a beggar comes asking for some alms from this person. So he pulls out a quarter bottle and gives in charity. So now, that's not being benevolent. You know, yeah, he gave something in charity, but was that something beneficial to the other person? So in that sense, we cannot say that Google is all good. And finally, Google can't award you liberation from birth, old age, disease, and death. Whereas God, if we approach authentically in a wonderful ways, you know, properly, then God can award you liberation from birth, old age, disease, and death. Is there anything which you would want to add on, which I might have missed out, which I can include later on? Anything in regards to proving that how Google cannot be called? Yes, Google has some extraordinary features. No doubt. No doubt that Google, it has extraordinary features. But this is a little too much that to claim that Google is God. This is a little too much. You have something? God gives mental satisfaction, and many times Google might give opposite of that. You might become more confused, overload of information. From choose from what, reject what. Sometimes, you know, one particular thing you search for and there are so many hits. Sometimes, you know, 1 lakh, 2 lakh, 10,000, so many. Mind becomes more confused. So, let's now see how it is affecting the human psyche. Till this point of time, we have come to some conclusion that yes, the position of Google being God can be challenged. It can be challenged. It's not something which is invincible. It is not something which is unbeatable. So now, let's see. Of course, internet, so many gifts. We can say that we are getting benefited because of the internet. Do you all agree that we are being benefited by internet? In so many ways, you know. In so many ways we are being benefited. But herein, there is a study which is being made overall, all over the world, that how internet is affecting, you might not call it gift, in a technical sense, but how it is affecting the human populace in so many ways. So the first thing, how in regards to the, we are talking about relationship, that it makes one impersonal. And this is study not done by religionists, not done by spiritualists. This is a study and survey and analysis done by the people who have come up with internet. And what are they observing in people who use so much internet? So the first thing which they have observed is that it makes one impersonal. You understand this word, impersonal? Now, can you share something or maybe some elaboration on this particular point? I guess most of you might be using internet. I myself use. So how would you speak on this particular point? Is it affecting someone over here in that way? Or have you seen anyone getting affected, becoming impersonal? What is the meaning of being personal? You do things for a certain person whom you love, having a relationship in a very personal way. You do something in a very personal way. Like, to give you an example, wife cooking for the husband. Is it a personal touch? Wife or mother cooking for the son. Is it something personal? Would you call it that it will enhance the relationship? Now, if the same act is done, that you take out your cell phone or your internet and you order the food from some pizzeria. Yes, the food is coming from some pizzeria, but it has lost the personal touch. The belly is fed, but what about the heart? The heart is fed when there is the personal touch. So, this is one observation which they have come up with. The second is, makes one impatient. How it is doing it. You know, people when they use this fast internet in the West, in India, you know, they had that dial-up connection and, you know, there would be a sound first and then there would be dialing up and slowly something would come up and you had to wait. The page would open, you know, after like 15 minutes or half an hour, you can go and you can do so many things in between. But now, broadband, such, you know, fast dial-up and everything is so fast. So what happens is, what they have observed is that the more a person is using this particular thing in such a fast way, anything, then when it is not done according to that speed or at that speed, people who are using it rampantly, they find that they have inculcated within them, within their system, impatience. You know, there was an incident of in an office wherein this gentleman, he was expecting, you know, an email. He wanted to very urgently look into the email which somebody had sent. It was very important for this person. And you know, he opened his Gmail account and, you know, it says loading. So loading, it was loading, loading. And I was waiting, you know, he was became so anxious, you know, he was pressing, you know, again that refresh, refresh, refresh. He was pressing that refresh button, loading, 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 still working. You know, it comes like that. Loading, still working, pressing refresh. He became so impatient, he lifted that PC and threw it outside the window. Unloaded completely. Or literally downloaded. So, herein, well, I have a video also, which is, you know, something to make us understand that it's not simply when you are using that time, that thing is experienced or being, you know, there is another thing, being intolerant. It's more or less, you know, they are both cousin brothers, blood brothers actually, impatience and intolerance. So, it's not that when you are actually using that it's getting into your system like that, but anywhere else you are, whether you are in a market or whether you are, say, in a party or in a place like this, you know, that particular thing is there in the system so much because we are used to clicking buttons and getting things like this, snap of a finger. You click a button and you find, you know, that message sent. Connecting starts, phone ringing. Even if the person is in America somewhere, immediately, you know, within seconds you are connected. But what happens is that we become so much dependent on this speedy life, on the speed connected life, that when things are not according to that particular habit of ours, then it makes us intolerant and impatient. I'll show you a small little video. This is again in regards to this particular point which we are discussing of how people become so much intolerant and impatient. Is it working? Let's just get the mic here. Connect with the mic and get the mic here. So, it's not that one may start behaving like that right away. It starts building up. It starts building up slowly, slowly. And we find in relationships also that when we are expecting, our expectation starts increasing more and more and more. Because when, say, internet or a media like that is presenting things in such a quick manner and in such a sophisticated manner, it puts us always in a system that when it comes to our relationship with someone else, when we see some flaw in that, we are expecting that person should be perfect like Google. That person should be perfect like, you know, my internet connection or my cell phone connectivity or whatever. And therefore, because of this mechanistic lifestyle, it starts affecting one's relationship. Makes one lazy because everything is at the fingertips. So, what they call it, people, a person becomes like a couch potato. They call it, becomes like a couch potato, wherein you see now it is getting on their waistlines you know, that kind of a lifestyle. It is affecting so many, the lower back problems and, you know, obesity. Then because of that, high cholesterol, heart attacks. And because of such kind of a lifestyle, there is hardly any physical activity. So the only physical activity is like this, you know, clicking. There was one girl in Bombay. She lost all touch sensation on her fingers because she would keep, she kept on messaging like more than 500 messages from her cell phone, you know, typing it out and also working on the, you know, computer so much. She lost, it became dead, almost numb. She lost all sensation on her tongue, oh sorry, on her fingertips. So, makes one lazy. How does it do that? Makes one ungrateful. Because everything is available free. So because everything is available free and you don't know who is providing it, there is no person you know whom you can express your gratitude, and because it's all coming so much for free, everything, you know, free download. Everywhere is a free download, everything free, free, free. So then, that particular emotion of being grateful for receiving something is being lost. And finally, what they have observed is, it makes one feel ashamed because of the nonsense which also keeps popping up in the internet. This is specifically in regards to the Indians who are surfing pornography so much in the internet, and the Indians are the most, you know, who are viewing all that on the internet. In fact, students, they have come to me and they have confessed that, you know, just because of that facility which was so easily available, you know, just few words you type, press enter, and you know, their relationship within their family was destroyed like anything. And many of them, in fact, few of the cases, they even committed suicide because whatever they were viewing, which was so easily accessible, they were so ashamed that they felt so guilty, they couldn't even go back to their families and admit that this is something which has happened in their lives. And a couple of cases in Bombay, they committed suicide. So, we have to be very careful in regards to, herein I am not saying that it's all bad, but yes, we should be aware of what are the side effects or after effects or what is the aftermath of usage of this particular thing. Like herein, this particular ad became, you know, very much popular when the observation was done. What do you see over here? A small boy watching. What is he watching? What is he watching in TV? And then he's asking his father, what is that moon supposed to advertise? Now this is a real life incident which took place. The kid is asking the father, what is the moon supposed to advertise? So why this question was asked by this kid to the father? Why would you, you know, or anyone else would ask a question like that watching TV? Because what is being shown in the TV, everything which is shown in the TV is supposed to advertise something. Like, you know, last year I was at the UK embassy, you know, to get my UK visa. I was at the UK embassy and, you know, they have the waiting lounge and there was a TV for everyone, you know. So my eyes just fell on the TV, which was going on the TV. There was some kind of a show of kids, small kids. And it was like some commercial or something like that. I didn't know what it was, but I remember it. It was something which was very hilarious. This kid, you know, his teacher is telling that sing some bhajan. So now in front of the classroom, this kid, you know, is trying to sing a bhajan. So he takes the microphone and he sings, Yashomati Maiya se Bole Nandalala. We all know, like, it's a famous, you know, kind of a song or a bhajan in connection with Krishna. So then he gets stuck after one line. So the teacher is, you know, prompting. Second line, something. Something speaks, something rhyming. Because it has to be something rhyming. So again the kid takes the microphone. Yashomati Maiya se Bole Nandalala Isko Laga Dala To Jinga Lala. So now, well, we don't expect that our kids sing such kind of bhajans. Now, this is something interesting which I read. If one page newspaper ad can sell you a bottle of shampoo, don't you think a full length movie can sell you a lifestyle? Quite thought provoking that, you know, watching a commercial, it instigates you. You can buy just a, you know, little bottle, just watching a commercial so many times. How many movies do we watch? Full length movie, 3 hours, sometimes 3.5, more than that. A full length movie definitely can sell a lifestyle. And what are we seeing now? What are we seeing is, if you just observe the fashions and the lifestyles which people are adopting, where are they getting all this from? Are they getting all this from their office? Are they getting all this from a temple? It's all sitting within four walls, night after night, watching so many movies. It gets in. It's not that you innocently, your eyes only watch the movies, and your mind is, you know, in temple, thinking about God. In fact, the opposite happens. When we are sitting in the temple, the eyes are looking at God and life banadala, jinga lala, something like that. All that stuff. Like, you know, when I was working, so we had a party, and this party there was one guy who was good at mimicking, you know, mimicry. He was good at mimicking. So he came up with a kind of a mimicry of what is the effect of the modern man after watching movies. That how would a modern man, you know, after watching so many movies, would relate with relationships. Since we are talking about human relationships in regards to the media and all that. So this man is introducing his relationships in connection with all the Bollywood stuff which this man has watched so much all over the years. So he is introducing his in-laws first. The man is introducing his in-laws. So he begins, ye hai meri patni, iska naam hai khoon bhari maang. Ye meri sali, iska naam hai phool bane angare. Ye meri saas, iska naam hai nagin. Aur mera sala, kuwara baap. Mere sasur, do gad jameen ke niche. So he, in fact, you know, it was just for a lighter side, he might have spoken something like that. But when we try to understand it on a serious note, that how, it's not just all the jokes apart, but how such kind of things, over here it said that lifestyles are being sold. People are, and it's all illusion. On the screen, it's all fiction, it's all illusion, it's all made up. But when it we try to imitate in our lifestyle. We don't just do it in an illusory way. We try to imitate in a realistic way. And when there is no proper compatibility to that, then we are depressed and, you know, so many other things, they come up. Then relationships, you know, they are at stake because of too much expectations of such kind of a lavish lifestyle. So, here is something very interesting, that what the age of information and technology has given us. There are some very thought-provoking cartoons which I am going to show you now in regards to information and technology, in regards to a modern man who is so much, you know, in the computer world. Herein, just read carefully. The husband is telling to the pregnant wife, "Your baby is developing very nicely. Would you like to send him an email?" "No, you weren't downloaded, you were born." The mother is telling to the son. The son is asking, means the question which was asked was that, was I born or just downloaded? "Dear Andy, how have you been? Your mother and I are fine. We miss you. Please sign off your computer and come downstairs for something to eat." The dad is sending an email to the son. Where? Upstairs. The son is sitting just upstairs. The mother is, you know, scolding. "You want me to visit your home page to see your homework?" "My name was David, but that sounded too old fashioned, so shortened it to..." Now this is interesting. "Hello Bob, it's your father again. I have another question about my new computer. Can I tape a movie from cable TV, then fax it from my VCR to my CD-ROM, then email it to my brother's cellular phone so he can make a copy on his neighbor's camcorder?" Just give me a glass of water. "With wireless sleep technology, the people in my dreams can send emails and faxes to the people in your dreams." Now these are fishes, you know, they are talking to each other. "No food, no love, I think we are living in a stupid screensaver." Lord Indra, you know, this is up in heavens now, Amravati. And you may visit our website www.heaven.gov for information and facilities available in the heaven. The computer says, "I need to upgrade my brain to be compatible with this new software. I want my husband to pay more attention to me. Got any perfume that smells like a computer?" "My husband passed away 8 months ago, but we still keep in touch. His email address is walterz@heaven.com. This is interesting. "Sorry, we can't email your pizza as attachment." It's a nice weight loss program. Anyone wants to try? To lose 1 pound, double click your mouse 6 million times. This is a, you know, bedtime story. Romeo and Juliet met online in a chat room, but their relationship just ended tragically when Juliet's hard drive died. "Didn't you get my email?" Finally, "You said I should spend more time with our children, so I turned their faces into computer icons." Well, you see, many times such things, we might find this to be humorous, hilarious, or little, you know, exaggerated. But am I being too far out to say that to some extent these things are getting into our relationship? The more we are using so many machines, the more it is getting into our relationship. So we talked about knowledge against information. So now transcendental knowledge, as mentioned in our scriptures, should be having these three ingredients. It should be factual, it should be stable, and it should be beneficial. Then that particular, even if it is an information, then you cannot call it information because it is something which is helping you. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam very wonderfully explains what is the definition of real actual knowledge. Just read carefully. It's a very succinct, Srila Prabhupada writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Transcendental or actual knowledge is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of others. That is actual knowledge. Vedyam vastavamatra shivadam tapatrayon unmulanam. Shivadam means something which is auspicious. Vastava means something which is factual. Vastu, something, yes, which is tangible. It is not something ephemeral. It is not something virtual. It is something which is tangible, which can change our life positively, our attitudes, our paradigms, our habits, our relationship. That is factual, stable, beneficial knowledge. Now, this is something very interesting, that these are the sites which are visited the most by specifically Indians, and also the other three specifically by the outsiders. So I would want to ask you now, if these are the sites which are most visited, just read on. Many of you might be aware also. Bharat Matrimony, Shadi.com, Jeevan Sathi, Marry, Bandhan, Simply Marry Me, Facebook, Orkut, Twitter. So what do you understand now with this particular analysis? How would you analyze it and present that, why people are visiting these sites more? Socializing. Okay, socializing. Is that enough? Yeah. Okay, to interact with whom? People, actual existing people, with bodies and minds and intelligence and souls, people. Okay, so here in, if in case you don't know about Twitter is like Facebook, Orkut is also like, you know, social networking site. Okay, so here in, our one friend said for socializing, and he's saying because we don't have time to meet people, so we meet them through the electronic system. Anything else? What is happening? Why people are visiting these sites more so much? Other than this, yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is an interesting point that we have lost. You know, sometimes people, have you experienced that nowadays when you meet people, they don't know how to open up a conversation also, you know, because they are so much dependent on usage of the cell phone. They don't know how to open up, they become socially incapable. And many times, you know, there is a very awkward silence. Have you heard of this term? There is a very awkward silence when people meet up, you know, that what to speak and how to speak and, you know, how to deal with people. They are so much afraid dealing with people because they are so much used to dealing with machines. So they don't feel awkward Because the machine is, you know, whatever you bang the machine, beat the machine, love the machine, perform aarti of the machine is the same. So there is this term which has come up now, being socially incapable, in which people, when they meet up also, physically when they meet up, there is an awkward silence which eats them. And they want to go back again to their machines to get rid of that awkward silence. So yes, this is a very important point. Yeah. Those pandits would come, you know, like. Even they have opened a website. if you want, you know, you can visit this particular. Yeah, so it's basically the same point. Okay. Man has become more optimistic to use this resource. In what way? How do you prove that this proves one's optimism? It's very easy. So for convenience sake, so it's very convenient, you know, rather than running around, you know, looking for, you know, even paper is becoming, you know, more inconvenient. So this is more for convenience sake. Are you married? Oh, okay. Okay, basically what we are over here, the bottom line, what we are understanding over here is that why people are visiting these sites more, because they are looking for relationship. All these sites are giving you what? Relationship. Facebook, Twitter, Orkut and all these other sites, they are giving you relationships. So ultimately, whether it is a machine or whether it is not a machine, what are we looking for in this world? Relationships. So what does it prove? That a machine is not going to satisfy us, or simply a search engine is not going to satisfy us. What is going to satisfy us is a person and a relationship with that person. That is going to satisfy us. So, we have to see through whatever we are doing in this 21st century, using all of these amenities, using all of these media. What we have to see through is that at the end of the tunnel, what are we expecting? Coming back to what? Relationship. That's what we are looking for. Now, herein, it's very interesting how there is the modern terms which are used and how relations with a difference can be understood, that even if you want to flirt, many people they flirt through the internet or through these websites, flirt with your realizations, get engaged to compassion, marry simplicity, go on a honeymoon with loyalty, and yes, you can divorce also. Divorce what? False ego. If I ask you that what is the difference between something which is complete and something which is finished in regards to life, it's a very interesting concept. If you meet a right person, you are complete. If you meet a wrong person, you are finished. Again, why this thing we are discussing? Because recently there was one incident which was reported. Are you aware of online chatting which goes on? Online chatting? Not chanting. Chatting. Online chatting. So this was one incident which I guess took place in America of a girl, and in this online chatting you can, like Facebook, you know, you can chat with anyone, any damn person. You don't you have no clue where the person is on this planet, where the person is doing that chatting. You have no clue. So this was an incident, it's a true incident, listen carefully. So this girl, she was chatting with a man and became friends, you know, like that, chat friends, they became friends. And then the other person, he is asking, you know, every day the chatting is going on, hi, how are you, it begins like this, you know, then where do you stay, like that. So then, as every day the chatting was becoming more and more detailed and more intimate, so the girl was giving information in her chat to this man that, you know, where her house is. She gave the information where the house is, where it is located, and he got the information that at what time are you in the house, what time you are not in the house, all these information. And she gave, you know, just that, sounding it very convenient, sounding it very innocent, she gave all this information. And within next week, someone came into her house, ransacked the house, took away all the valuables of the house, and, you know, then they had to go to the police. Practically all the valuables were gone from the house. They went to the police. And the policeman, he said that the culprit is not the thief who has come and stolen. The culprit is your daughter. Because she gave all the information to that thief whom she was doing the online chatting, that where her house is located, at what time there is no one in the house, where is her room located, where is the living room, what is there in the living room, what are the other things which they possess. All the information she gave. And this chatting was going on for 6 months. And you know who was this person who was chatting? He was a policeman. He did it on purpose, just to make this family aware that what are, you know, because the thieves, they do that. Online thievery. That they get to know all the information about this thing from someone, just getting friends, you know, just some friends through Facebook or Twitter or something like that. And so many crimes are taking place, serious crimes are taking place because of this. So, you know, here is a difference between something which is complete, something which is finished. So try to understand, it's not the same. Now, this is very important, that to understand what are the pitfalls in material relations, when relationship is simply based on a material platform, that, you know, what I get out of the other person, when it is done in the mood of exploitation rather than in the mood of service, being selfless, in the mood of giving, not just in the mood of just taking, taking, taking. Because what happens is, the more you use all that internet and all that stuff, it's always taking, taking, taking. It's always, you know, downloading, uploading, whatever. That kind of a language. So the first pitfall, it's called personality mismatch. That when we get into a relationship with a person, we often find that the relationship doesn't work out because of personality mismatch. That somebody says, I am too hyperactive and my partner is too slow. Or, you know, I don't want to be so hyperactive as my partner. So there is a personality mismatch. I am very introvert and the partner is very extrovert. I am very systematic and my partner is very unsystematic. I am very clean, the partner is very unclean. So this is one thing, this is called personality mismatch. So now if I ask you, does that happen? All of you friends sitting over here, have you experienced in your relationship this particular pitfall? In any kind of relationship, whether husband, wife, whether parents and children, brothers and brothers, sisters and sisters, personality mismatch. So how do you cope up with this? How do you take care of this? What do you do then? Or are there some real, you know, good personality mismatches? Like I quoted few. Is there anything, you know, the latest ones? Latest personality mismatch. We are not talking about externally. We are talking about the temperament of people in that. Okay, forget about that. Does that happen, personality mismatch? Does it happen? Okay. And how what do you do then? Yeah. Huh? Try to accommodate. Being, you extend yourself. You become more adjustable. Okay. So which means you are in trying to accommodate, you are trying to become more tolerant. You are trying to become more patient. This is one way you deal with the personality mismatch thing. Okay. You had something? One has to keep silence, you know. Maunavrat, Mauni Baba. Yeah. One can avoid. How? Leave it. Okay, you go your way, I go my way. You know, like one time a wife called the husband and she is saying, aapke, kya? Aapke virah mein main 20 din mein aadhi ho gayi. The husband is saying, 20 din aur ruko, main aata hun. Well, that sounds to be a little controversial. Okay, anything else? Contract.
Contract. Suppose marriage is there, but it is a contract marriage, or it is a past marriage, or there are contract marriage. So this is a mismatch.
But you mean to say that when marriages are done out of contract, I don't know, what is this contract marriage? Yeah, okay, if it is a love marriage, you know, everything is like you. Even in that there is mismatch. Even in that there is a mismatch, you know. Yeah. How? Ooh. Well, that sounds a little imposing. Imposing yourself. Does that work? So I'm asking that personality mismatch, definitely it happens. I'm asking, what do you do? What are the remedies which you have sought for? Yes. Well, this is wonderful. We can accept and use that quality. Like for example, say, you know, somebody, might be very systematic in doing, perfectionist. A person is perfectionist. Okay? Now many times, being perfectionist might create an altercation or a clash, you know. Come on, you have to be flexible. You can't be always a perfectionist. But you can use that particular quality of the partner, being perfectionist, in a better way. That, okay, that if you are being a perfectionist, start from yourself. Many times, person who are perfectionist, the fingers are always going, this is not perfect, this is not perfect, you are not perfect. let the finger start from here. What about you? So, when we talk about personality mismatch, we have to understand that if that person's personality is not matching with me, there are so many things which I have, which are flaws in me, which the other person has also complaints about. So if I am full of so many faults, then I cannot afford to point out the flaws or the mismatches of the other person. Which means, just like, in simple words it is like this, just like I am tolerating this person is also tolerating me. That's what the essence of this particular flaw or the pitfall is. Now, social pressures. That we live in a society wherein the society has become with so many expectations and demands. When you marry someone, you are not just marrying a person, you are marrying the family also. Along with the person whom you are marrying comes the in-laws. And they have laws. Therefore they are called. There are certain laws which you have to follow. You have to keep up with the laws. And because if you don't keep up, then you know there are these clashes. The wife is saying, you are envious of mine, you know, Micah, my parents. You are always, you know, apne hi maa ki god mein rehte ho. Like that. Meri maa ki kaun dekhega? Like that. So, like that, you know, when it comes to I, me and mine. So, the pressures are there. You have to deal with the pressures and try to adjust your family life, your official life and your other social life. So, because of that, the relationships are, it's called stretch thin. Have you heard this term called stretch thin? It becomes so stretched that almost it's about to just snap. Complex lifestyles. Now, talking about this complex lifestyle again, we are talking about so much which we become addicted to. Become addicted to TV, become addicted to internet, become addicted to, you know, using, say a cell phone. Like, I'll give you one typical example of this. Two friends, they decide to spend time together one evening. This is a typical thing which happens many times. So, two friends, they decided, okay, we'll just go for a walk, be together, actually be together without any site coming in between, website coming in between. So, they want to hang out together. So, they go for an evening walk. And then, what happens? One of them, his cell phone rings. So they are talking, you know, some important talk. How many times have you experienced? You are talking to someone, very important talk, you are just expressing your feelings and the cell phone rings. And the person so impersonally starts speaking to the other person on the phone, leaving you as if you are just a piece of rubbish. As if you are not even existing in front of him. You know how insulting it is? Many times, people, they don't even seek permission. Can I take this call? They simply, you know, start speaking as if, you know, who are you? So, these two friends, they are on an evening walk and they are talking and one of the friends, his cell phone rings. So, he starts speaking. And what is he speaking? Oh, you are over there. Now this friend, he is so close, he is talking to someone who is so far away, miles away. Oh, you are over there. You know, I will definitely give you a call in 5 minutes. Which means he is going to be done with him in 5 minutes. And they are supposed to be on an evening walk together. Spending some quality time, soul searching time. So then, in the meantime, when he is on a cell phone talking to someone miles away, the other person, he is feeling left out. Why is no one is calling me? So he pulls out his cell phone. You know, he starts punching. He starts, you know, fingering, fiddling it, you know. Then he makes a call to someone else. While he is talking, in the meantime, he makes call to someone else. Just, you know, just for the sake of talking to someone. So then, both of them are together physically. He is talking to someone you know, 1,000 miles away. He's talking to someone 10,000 miles away, and both are walking and talking to someone else. Is it not a common thing which happens? And finally, you know, after 1 hour of talk, then they say, let's go home now. Well, what was the point? And you know, nowadays, cell phones are designed like that. If you know, like, you know, the cell phone which I have, by mistake, there was one particular button which got pressed. And I didn't know that there was this kind of application in this cell phone. It said fake call activated. How many of you know about this? Fake call activated, you know. There are some very high-tech cell phones, they have that fake call. Which means, if you are fed up with someone, you know, physically someone is talking to you and you are fed up, you just press that, there will be a fake call and it will start ringing. So, I didn't know that it's, you know, something like that. So, it just got pressed and my phone started ringing. I said, there is no number, you know, it's because who is calling you? It's just the cell phone on its own ringing. So, it said unknown. I said, unknown. It became, I was a little more fear. Unknown, unknown person calling me. No, you know, caller ID, no number, nothing. So, then, you know, I press that, what is that, you know, talk button. I press the talk button, you know. I said, maybe somebody is calling. Hello, hello, Hare Krishna. Nobody is speaking. Unknown, nobody is speaking. Some ghost calling or what? Then, you know, I realized that it's just to get rid of someone. That, you see, what they are trying to put in your system is cheating. What is it called? Cheating. That if you are with someone and you activate that particular thing, you are cheating that person, that you are talking to someone and there is actually everything is fake. And not only that, nowadays they also have these kind of things, you know. I don't know what is the technical term to this. But if you want to tell to your friend that you are not able to hear him, you are in a traffic. So, your cell phone has an application wherein your friend can listen to a traffic sound, you know. There is a file with all the traffic sound in it. And you have to just put in that profile, and when your friend calls and you want to tell your friend, when you are sitting in your bedroom and your friend will listen, you know, honking of the horns, and you, "Arey, it's too much sound, you know, I'll call you later. I can't hear you." And he hears all the traffic sound. So, he is assured that you are in a traffic. Now, what is all this trying to give us? Is it trying to really build our relationship in a very healthy manner that we can trust people? What to speak of that? Forget about this. You are using a cell phone, somebody you call, you give 2 missed calls, or if the person doesn't lift the phone, so many things goes on in your mind. Phone kyun lift nahi kar raha? Why the person is not lifting the phone? It's ringing. It's ringing. And there are these applications also in that systems, that wherein, you know, your cell phone can tell to the other person it's out of range, when there is full range. So why the person is not lifting the phone? You have given missed calls and he has not called back. Something majorly, some problem is going on, which means you feel neglected, that didn't even lift the phone, didn't even call back, you feel neglected. So then there is depression, then there is doubts, then there is distrust, wherein that person might be just in the bathroom. So, because of the complex lifestyles, and finally, with all of this, there is no proper guidance as to how to properly strengthen, fortify the relationships on the human platform, not on a virtual platform. We want to establish relationships on a human platform. So, proper guidance can help that particular thing. Now this is something very interesting. If you observe it, let me know what you understand with this. The relationship spiral, shifting the focus. What do you understand with this? The two diagrams which are in front of you. Are they same or are they different? Different, obviously. So, yeah. Okay. What is that? In, out. In, out means? One is in, one is out. So, what do you understand with your, in regards to your relationship? Huh? So, one particular diagram wherein you see that the arrow is going inside, which means you are trying to go inside. And the other is the arrow is going outside. You are going out of the relationship. Okay, wow. Yeah. Going deeper in. Yes. But try to also relate it with what shifting the focus. Try to understand. You have to understand it with that title. Yes, you had something. Get out of the relationship. So it's like a chakruvyu. Okay. Basically, your opinions are valid and valued both. Over here, what I'm trying to explain is that, you see, many times the focus is always on me. So the spiral is going inside. That if I am a brother of someone or if I am son of someone or whatever, then what are they giving me? So the arrow is going inside. What am I getting from them? And the other diagram is that the focus is shifted. What am I giving them? The other diagram is depicting your relationship on a selfless platform. The first diagram to the left depicts one's relationship on a selfish platform. It's going me. The arrow is going inside. And the other diagram is that what am I doing for the other person? So imagine if people follow in their relationship the second diagram, wherein the focus is on the other person giving selflessly, how many problems can we solve? In fact, all the problems can be solved when it comes to relationships, when the focus is shifted. So just remember next time that whenever you are in a relationship, you want to make that relationship healthy, strengthen it, fortify it. Just remember these two diagrams. Whether my relationship is depicting the first diagram, which is unhealthy, the focus is just on me, or whether my relationship is based on the second diagram where the focus is, yes, not me. As Jesus Christ said, thy will be done, not my. So that is what is very important in the relationship. We have some good quotes over here. Your near and dear one needs your presence more than your presence. Nowadays, you know, online birthday card. Online this, online that. It is a greater compliment to be trusted than to be loved. This is very important nowadays. People talk so much about love. But more than love, is there any trust? You know, that's very important. The best time to make friends is before you need them. Not that, you know, once I need a certain kind of friend, then I go on Facebook and look for someone of that kind. As long as we don't forgive people who have hurt us, they occupy a rent-free space in our heart. And to conclude with, this word relation, I have made it into an acronym, which means what R stands for in a relation, what E stands for, what L, what A, what the other alphabets in this particular word stands for. R stands for respect, E for encouragement, L for love, A for being accommodating, tolerance, I for integrity, O for obedience, N for being non-judgmental. So if we just follow the word relation with this particular qualities in it, what each of the alphabet over here stands for, then we can start living a life which is based on the human platform, which is supposed to bring us back together as human beings with our body, mind and soul, not just, you know, with some gadgetry attached to it. We need people. We don't need machines to satisfy us. In fact, we may use the machines to get in touch with people, but we should make sure we are really getting in touch with people, not just getting affected by the machines and getting in touch and getting touched and getting affected by the machines. So remember the spiral, the diagram, and remember the last, this particular slide, wherein these are the ingredients of healthy relationship. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Sorry if it was a little delayed. Somehow your interactions were quite lively, so that made it very easy for all of us to understand. If in case you have any pressing questions in regards to today's seminar, you can come up over here. We'll have a 5-minute kirtan, just a 5-minute kirtan before we break up for our dinner. And after that, in case if you want to clarify something, whichever we discuss the points, you can come up. I'll be here. We can talk it out. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, there are some important